and thank you for coming. This will be a little bit different. If you are not familiar with forests and forest floor, do not despair. The example that I will be using is really relevant for any kind of teaching of any kind of classification, be it insects or plants or soils, or more specifically a top portion of the soil in the forest ecosystems. It's really a compilation, this presentation is a compilation of two studies that our group at UBC has done. So I'll go over the concept of the instructional scaffolding. And as I said, I'll use the example of forest floor simply because that's where we applied it, and I'll end up with a couple of lessons learned over the years of this project. So as the word indicates, the idea comes from the having supports which are gradually removed over the process of constructing something, being a building or being a knowledge. And more specifically, instructional scaffolding is offering guidance to your learners over the course of the learning process, that guidance is tapered off or removed gradually so that towards the end of the learning process, learner is fully equipped to do the task that you were trying to teach him or her. This scaffolding theory comes from cognitive psychology, it was introduced in early 1950s, but its origin goes even earlier, to early 20th century, to the Russian psychologist Lev Vygotsky, I guess, who started developing the theory of how children learn language. And how parents are supporting them to learn that. Okay, to bring it a little bit more closer to what's done in the classroom, teacher helps students to master specific tasks, and those are the tasks that students cannot individually do on their own. In order to be successful, teacher needs to know what is, and this is psychological lingo, needs to know what is the zone of proximal development. And if you're wondering what is the zone of proximal development, as I did when I first saw it, it's a distance between what your student can do by him or herself and what is the step that you as a teacher are trying to bring them to with your assistance. So bring it to something a bit more tangible that we can understand. The forest floor module that we developed for our introduction to soil science class at UBC, we used this because it was something that we didn't previously have in the course, and because majority of our students in the course are forestry students, it was needed for them. And this scaffolding approach was particularly relevant for this specific topic because of various challenges that classification of the forest floor has. First of all, this is not the easiest classification to throw out at your students. It requires lots of field practice and lots of repetition of various visual and tactile and memory recall learning or memorization, if you want to. And then in addition to that, when we started looking at available resources out there, we realized that there are not many of them. They're quite outdated, pretty boring. And also people who do have practical knowledge are slowly but surely retiring. So I was worried, because I'm not a forester, I was worried that we will lose the knowledge that is available out there, so before all of my colleagues with this knowledge disappear, we better come up with something that we can use in our post-secondary education. So the learning objectives of the forest floor modules were to allow our students to be able to identify the main forest floor types, In addition to that, to also learn about the main organisms that are involved in the process of decomposition in the forest ecosystems, and also to understand the importance of the forest floor between the overall forest ecosystem. So what are the scaffolding components in this particular module? Starting with one that you as an instructor or teacher are most involved, lecture, in-class lecture on the specific topic, in this case forest floor. Then we follow that by a series of various multimedia materials that are all posted online. So if you go to forestfloor.soilweb.ca, you will find all this material. It's all open access. We give that material to our students to review and go through after the lecture and before the hands-on lab that follows that. The hands-on lab starts with the instructor-led demonstration on the samples that we brought from specific forests that are on our campus. And the instructor then goes and shows the student the key components of the forest floor and what are the things that they have to look for in order to be able to identify different forest floor types. That is then followed by hands-on student collaborative activity when they work in small groups and they are given fresh similar samples and they try to do what instructor showed them and what they also observed in this online forest floor educational resource. After that activity, they write an assignment which they submit, but that's not the final step. Final step is we send them out to our campus. We are lucky that we have a park and UBC farm on our campus, so we have easily accessible nearby location where students can go, and we ask them to do on their own self-guided field activity. Neither instructor nor TAs go with them. Students go with their phones. They navigate the UBC farm. They have to find a specific location. And at that specific location, they have to answer a set of specific questions that are in the mobile app. They have to download before they go to the this so-called scavenger hunt. They have to download this Quest to Go free app on their phones. And that allows them then to find specific locations and questions that are guiding them to do certain observations of the forest and also of the forest floor in a couple of soil pits that we pre-open for them, allow them to go through the process of description and identification. They are collecting points during the self-guided quest or activity. They can play it individually or in teams, and while they are playing, they can see the progress of their team, and they can also see progress of other teams on their phone screen if other teams are playing at the same time. So there is a little bit of competitive nature in the game as well. So that would be the capstone of the scaffolding project. When they go on their own, they practice something that you guided them previously through sets of various instructional techniques, and it really empowers students in their learning process. So several lessons that we learned through this process, through this project, is that if you, and you probably know that, but let me just repeat that, if you provide your students with too much of the direction, you're really limiting their learning, and they don't really feel that they are challenged enough. Scaffolding, on the other hand, gives students control over their learning, and it's way more engaging than just sitting and listening to us. This kind of approach, yes, it takes more time, and yes, if you involve online resources, it costs more than just giving a lecture, but it's way more rewarding, and I would highly recommend that you do that in your teaching if you can. So with that, do I have time for questions?
Yeah, we have plenty of time.
Okay, good.
So how did you find Quest to Go?
I am lucky that at UBC we have both Center for Teaching and Learning and also UBC Studios. So one of my colleagues from there actually brought a person from 14 Oranges Software, which is a local software company that developed it, and he gave a brief presentation about the Quest to Go. And while he was presenting, I was thinking, oh yeah, I can use this in my class. So we tested it originally in the forest ecology course, where we sent students on a tour, because in our park there are various pathways that general public can take. So we tested it over there with first group of students. It worked really well. Anything that you can teach students through the iPhones, today's generation really is attached to them all the time, is of an interest for them. So you can even slide something as they consider boring as soil to learn through their beloved iPhones. So, yes, Garrett.
How is the setup? I mean, is it for the question input, like how's the interface to get the information into the app to be able to use it?
It's very user friendly. If you go to Quest to Go, and I have no shares in the company, so I'm just a user, and if I can, and I'm really a non-techy person, if I say it's easy, it really is easy. You go to Quest to Go, you log in, you go to what they call backend, where you set up the questions, you enter the questions there, you set up all kinds of things. Do you want them to collect points, have subtraction when they're wrong, and that kind of stuff. And you release your quest. Your quest can be open forever, or it can be open for a short period of time. You can really manipulate it, but it's really user-friendly. And then they have to download that quest to go on their phones before they go and play. It's really simple as that.
Did you have any compatibility issues with students that, say, didn't have iPhones and had...
I was worried about that when we started, because I thought, oh, maybe they won't have, but nowadays they all have phones. But on the other hand, if they don't, because I allow them to play in groups, I tell them that they can play with a colleague. There is a glitch. At the moment, the Quest to Go is only available for iPhones. They keep telling me it will be available for Android, so that was a disadvantage. Some students had Androids, not iPhones. But, you know, it gives them a chance to meet colleagues and play in groups. So, yeah, it wasn't an issue. They have them.
We have time for one more question.
Yes, Mark. As you know, Mark, we have no extension in Canada. not in extension, just because we don't have it, but I know it's being used in museums at UBC. There are a couple of museums, so it's indoor-outdoor activities, so it really has an open, it has a possibility for different things. I used it for presentation in my faculty to show people some of my teaching techniques, and I send my colleagues, including my dean, on a scavenger hunt through our building. So you can really set it up anywhere, as long as you have connections. So you can't be at too far remote location, but with GPS, yeah. But yeah, extension or anything else that comes to mind, it can be used.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks.